Welcome to the Code of Entry podcast, where we cloud the issues with facts and help you upskill to stay on the digital edge. Here's your host, Greg, with the latest.
Hey, team. Greg here with your Code of Entry podcast, joined today by Leanna Blatnick. Leanna, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
She's super excited to be here. It only took 30 minutes of note-taking before we started. Interestingly enough, we're going to talk about being a perfectionist and how that can be a bad thing. And it took 30 minutes to get started taking notes, just saying.
That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but yes, it does.
I don't exaggerate, ever.
A little.
Never. Mm. Yeah, the absolute's probably there. So, yeah, Leanna joins us by way of Denver. Graduated from West Point back in 2016.
Yep.
Just a couple days ago. Man, seems like yesterday. And yeah, does project management for Code of Entry now. Code of Entry podcast. Look at that. And we're like, hey, well, we need to get you on the podcast. What do you want to talk about? And she's like, how people want things perfect and it's not realistic. And we can totally talk about that. I'll give it to you to kick off. What do you think we should talk about today?
Yeah, I guess it's both sides of perfectionism. Both, is it good enough for, in our space, for the client? Is it ready to show? Even for V1, but then on the flip side, maybe even on a personal level, whether it's applicable to personal life or business or what have you, but perfectionism, how we think about perfectionism for ourselves, like when are we ready to take on the next step in our career, take the big leap, or when is it good enough for work or work deliverables for V1 so we can iterate on it? So we can actually throw something at the wall and at least move forward and progress there. I want to take a look at it from a couple different examples and hear your experience too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point because especially we talk about clients and a lot of folks, you start having the conversation, you're like, hey, I want to get a prototype in front of you. I want to get an alpha, a beta. And they'll be like, oh, well, this isn't what I wanted at all. But it's a great opportunity to advance the conversation because without a starting point, you're never going to start. And I think that's one of those other things about always wanting things to be better. You can't continuously improve over nothing. I would flippantly tell people, they'd be like, oh, you're a data scientist. What do you think about this? I think 1% is an infinite increase over zero. So how are we doing? We're not passing yet, but we're doing infinitely better than we were yesterday. So it's just continuing to improve, but get something in front of people. So even if you get a product out and it's just a sketch of what you're thinking and it gives somebody a tangible point of reference, if you're going to write a policy document or a strategy or come up with a new idea, most people are going to be like, I don't know. I'll know it when I see it. And at least if you give them something, even if they're completely unhappy with it, they can throw darts at it. It gives them a place to start giving you constructive feedback. Yeah, I've got stories for this topic for days, right? It's my pet peeve in the DoD on like data things. People would be like, oh, have you done this? I'd be like, I don't know, but I've got 5 years of data that we've been bringing in and doing analysis on. What are you doing? We're still working on our strategy documents about how we want to admire this problem more. Great, thanks. You're not helping anybody.
It's not a linear approach, which is something I suppose they teach you about in school, right? There's more of the agile scrum approach to things, not just projects, but just everything, right? And sometimes you'll learn about that in school. It might make sense on paper. Sometimes applying it can be difficult because you're in that position how do you determine what is good enough for V1 or B? It's subjective, right? What good enough is, even right, as a starting point. So.
Yeah, and look at the U.S. adoption of like drones. If the U.S. was in the position that Ukraine is right now, we wouldn't be doing nearly the things they're doing because they don't have the rules against it. Here, we would have been like, we really know that you can strap a bomb to a drone and you can fly it into a tank and it saves a lot of money and saves a lot of lives. But did you go through the whole process? Did you write white papers and bid this out? And did you make sure that it would survive the impact of a nuclear warhead? No, I didn't do any of that. Then you need to stop. And so I think there are a lot of innovation barriers in defense. One of those is seeking perfection. One of them is just all the bureaucracy that's put into place to make sure that there aren't set-asides and handouts and stuff. So it's kind of hard to innovate with that culture for two reasons. It's the perfectionist in a lot of the senior leaders that don't want to make a decision until they have way too much information. And then the other side is the bureaucracy that's put in place to keep anyone from getting ahead. That kind of, so yeah, it's a detriment to innovation.
For sure. I think, what do you think is underlying all of
I think it's a risk thing. Folks, I think imposter syndrome is more common than not. And people are in charge and they don't want to expose themselves to making a wrong decision. Maybe right. It's a kind of zero defect mentality of, I need more information. I need to make sure it's perfect. I need to make sure I made the right investment at the right time and everything's perfect. And you end up with, and I've said it a little bit earlier, you end up in this like problem admirer space where people want to admire the problem until they know even more instead of just striving to get better, right? Rapidly prototype, get something, continue to iterate, learn by doing. Mm-hmm. Instead, folks are really busy. They're risk averse. They're very aware that they're in charge. And they want to make decisions about every little thing instead of delegating. You ask for a root cause, and I'm going off like a laundry list here. But I think it's a risk aversion where, a decade past ending combat operations in Iraq formerly, right? If you had gone and told me in 2006 when I was in a tank in Ramadi, somebody was going to be admiring a problem on which piece of data we should save on a hard drive, I would have been like, that's stupid. Nobody's going to die over that. Like, just save it. And now people are like, we've lost a lot of our frame of reference on things that are like emergencies, like important versus urgent.
Yeah. I was just going to say.
There are a lot of people where things are urgent, but they're not important, which means they shouldn't be urgent. Yeah. So it's just a frame of reference, really establishing like, why are you so risk averse? What is the downside to making the wrong decision, but the wrong decision still being better than where you are today? I don't understand that, you know, that kind of philosophy.
Yeah.
Make a decision with the information you have available, learn from it, and make your next decision. As long as you're learning, there's no downside.
Yeah, it's the negative. I would agree. It's the negative connotation. Feeling of risk or being wrong, I suppose, in different settings, being wrong can have different effects, right? So maybe that's where some of it comes from. But like you said, a decision is better than no decision. And then you make the next one.
Yeah.
Information.
And in our current context, right? Like I always go down like the super high risk military lane. But like even in our current context, are there decisions that we're going to make that are going to negatively impact our business? And most of the time it's no. Okay, we're going to make a decision because the client can't make up their mind. So we're just going to pick so we can put something in front of them. And then we'll know for sure they like it or they don't. And we can move on. We'll save ourselves months of hemming and hawing in client meetings where they're not sure and we're not billing them anymore because we've given them a quote and we want to stay to the quote and all this stuff. And we just waste all this time when you don't know. Okay, we're going to go with version A. And if they don't like it, we'll go to version B. And while we might waste 10 hours that way, we're going to save 200 hours on all the back and forth of not knowing.
Yeah.
So it's just, what is the real risk of moving forward in business and taking those checks and balances? Because so internally at Code of Entry, we have some clients and we do a lot of work for them for digital marketing, website design, some specialized IT projects. And we'll be sitting in meetings all the time and I'll just be like, do A, right? And it's okay. That's why I'm as part of the process. Like y'all do great work and I just sit there and accept the risk to enable you to do work.
Yes. And that's a good point. I think, and coming from the startup world or perspective, right? Failing fast equals learning fast. So I think it's a culture difference too in being risk adverse or just looking at risk differently. So I think that can be valuable, but it can be difficult in not a startup environment when the client wants to pay for the service and then to get the service all at once. So there's a little bit of expectation setting, of course, but just leading by example to set the culture of iteration and starting with V1 and getting better and just getting the client on board with that. And it's to their benefit, like you said, 10 hours doing it that way, but we won't waste hundreds of hours doing it the other way and trying to read the client's mind when they don't even quite know what they want.
Yeah. And so we're recording this on International Women's Day. Congratulations, ladies. Appreciate you. And I didn't expect to go this way with it, but another interesting thing in a lot of big businesses, a lot of tech companies, the government, is you have a lot of groupthink. You have folks that by time they're senior ranking, they're at executive or decision maker levels, they've been doing that job 15, 20 years with the same other people that have been doing it for 15 or 20 years. And oh, by the way, in STEM and in the government, at least especially in the military, you have a lot of males and you have a lot of people hanging out with common life experiences at that point for the last 15 or 20 years with the same perspective. And a lot of your problem admiration probably comes from the fact that when you ask people for insights, you're getting the same thing you were already thinking. So it's like, all right, what are the gaps? What am I not thinking of here? And everybody comes to the table and they're like, yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing. And I've had really great luck to have teams of more diverse thought as I've grown up through the military. Okay, maybe not necessarily as a lieutenant back in the day, right? It's a group of 16 immature dudes rolling around in tanks, somehow coming home alive. That was great. But then fast forwarding to, or maybe looking back, like as cadets, like having, man, I remember the first time I saw, and this would be really bad, but the first time I saw a Catholic cadet on Ash Wednesday with the ash smudge on their forehead. And I'm like, hey, you've got something on your forehead. And they're like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no, I'm trying to help you out. You've got like shoe polish or something. And okay, you're from a small town, right? That's what I learned. So just, it's this whole brand new world of thinking and people and perspectives. And going back to this perfection thing, like you can fill in your gaps. You can actually get towards a lot better by asking people, but you still have to make the decision. And I think the balance there is you need to trust the people that are giving you their opinions. And it's hard to trust them when they're all have the exact same opinion as you, because you don't know if you're getting that broad perspective. So it's like you look at Code of Entry and we've got folks from all over the country that work for the team with a whole bunch of different backgrounds and experiences. And I think it's super helpful, right? So it just comes back to, okay, what's the root cause of chasing perfection and paralysis by analysis? It's people not taking the risk to make decisions. Why are they not taking that risk? And I think sometimes it's, there's not enough diversity in the analysis that you're doing that they're not comfortable. And I think so having a lot of other folks, men, women, so whether we're talking race, gender, where you're from, I think it's important to have that diversity. And I wouldn't have told you that when I was a college student and be like, oh no, we're all just smart people. We don't need a whole lot of other people. We got this. But then through experience, right? Like I definitely look at things different than you look at things. And we can tell when we make websites for clients. I will lay out a website all day. I will make it perform the right function. Is it going to be pretty? Probably not.
We've got other people for that.
Yeah, we got people for that. Teamwork makes the dream work. But it's the same again in informing this problem definition. You're going to make the right decision. You need that kind of same diversity of thought, diversity of skill.
Yeah. Said.
Thanks. We're talking about perfection and making decisions. And you alluded to at the beginning, like, making choices in life, and we're talking a lot about business. You got out of the academy, you were doing your first job in the commercial world, and you ended up going to a startup, right? What helped you make that decision to take less compensation, go to a startup where you're going to get some equity and stuff, and hopefully that still pans out because they haven't gone to the IPO yet. But yeah, we're working on it. But yeah, what was that calculus that helped you make a decision and not just sit there and be like, I could go do whatever the routine thing is. It had to be an exciting feel to go to a startup right off the bat.
Yes. So much so that when I did the interview, we had to make sure it was a real company. You know, this is a scam. It's just a collection of people. So it was exciting. I think for me, leading into that decision, I had spent about 9 months working more like gig jobs and doing a little bit of upskilling, trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And it got to a point where I stopped all of my gig jobs, all of my, you know, income at the time, and forced myself to make a decision. Funny enough, yes, I had to, I could have continued down that path and did another 9 months, 18 continuous plus months of starting and not finishing certifications because I wasn't sure if that's what I wanted to do, and just dove in and chose a job, or rather chose a company to try to get hired at. And not, I think the mind shift there was understanding or having the confidence that just because I took this job doesn't mean this is going to be my job for the rest of my career. I think that's a big fear for a lot of people. I don't know about maybe in the Army, just because you are maybe guaranteed to at least move around every however many months, maybe that's less of a fear. But I'm sure coming for people transitioning, whether they're retired or just after 5 years, 8 years, whatever it is, I'm sure that can be a very similar experience in, ooh, what do I know what I want to do? And then making that first decision, that first step coming out of the military into, say, the commercial world, that might feel like the end all be all, but it's...
Yeah. Spoiler, Leanna and I are not the same age. I know I look really young, but, and I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I don't think you ever completely know. It's just, oh, what do I want to do? You're never stuck. But at the same time, you've got to make decisions for what you're going to be for a period of time. There's many seasons to life. Okay, in this season, what am I going to do? What's the decision going to be? I remember Leanna worked at Guild Education, and I remember when she did her interview for Guild, she had to like give references, and the lady like called me, and I'm like interviewing her interviewer, right, for asking for the reference. I'm like, no, here's what I want to know. Are you worthy of Leanna working for you? And I say that just because that perspective, I think, works for people being interviewed for jobs too. So go into an interview and yeah, part of it is, are you a good fit for that company? But the other side is, believe in yourself, and are they a good fit for you? Do they deserve to have you on the team? You need to remember that you're a valuable asset too. So we're way off perfection for a minute, but it's just, you're never going to be perfect. Nothing's ever going to be perfect, but make decisions in the moment, live in the moment. And yeah, perfection's never going to happen. Don't chase it. Just live where you are and make decisions and enjoy your life. Don't work to live to work. No, I see I got that wrong. Yeah, don't live to work, work to live, right? Like your job and stuff, hopefully it's a lot of fun and you enjoy your coworkers and your job and your mission and it's fulfilling. But at the end of the day, why? And that kind of goes into your risk appetite for making decisions too. If your job isn't the most important thing in the world, or the decision you're making is not the most important thing in the world, why can't you make one?
Yeah. Yeah, that mindset will take a lot of the pressure off, because when you're in that analysis paralysis or like decision paralysis, you're often spiraling. You're talking to yourself in an echo chamber of sorts. And then that's what causes you to maybe spiral because you can't seem to find your way out of it, right? Out of that thinking loop. So just take a step back. Things are not an emergency. Like hopefully, if that's the situation, right? And yeah, make a decision. And then if it doesn't go the way you wanted to, the outcome wasn't what you wanted, then you can make another decision and you learn from that. So.
And the funny thing is, if it is an emergency, you don't have all that time to be rethinking about it anyway. You need to do something. So it's like an interesting paradigm, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've enjoyed having you visit today. Flew her in from Denver to do this in person. And okay. She had other work to do. We didn't just make the decision. She was going to come be on the podcast. We don't have it like that yet. Waiting on some sponsors. So reach out.
Yes, this is a good bonus. Opportunity.
Yeah, good bonus opportunity. So I appreciate you coming and talking about decisions and perfection and a little bit about your journey of how you got started. I think that was really interesting to me. Just, hey, like I decided I need to start my life and you start with a step. So you took that step, and fortunately we were able to steal you away at some point. So it was great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for listening, and we'll be back with another episode soon. Until then, keep hustling.
Thanks for listening. Find us on social media at Code of Entry and online at codeofentry.com. Check back for new episodes or join the team by signing up for notifications. Until next time, keep hustling.